Gail's not here.
I'm not interrupting anything, am I? You three look deep in thought. Have you ever felt a knife cut through human flesh and scrape the bone beneath?
It's him.
Who?
The killer. He can see us.
Just keep him on the phone.
What do you want me to say?
I don't know. Just keep him talking. Come on, Gail.
What are we doing?
Hi.
Look for somebody with a cell phone.
What's your favorite scary movie?
He'll never find me.
Yeah, what do you care? Let them have their fun. So, what's up?
What's your favorite scary movie?
Showgirls. Absolutely frightening. What's yours?
Oh!
Sorry.
What's your problem?
Wait, let me guess. A house in Sorority Row? Dorm that drip blood? Splatter University? Graduation day? Final exam? Am I close?
Hey, everybody. Welcome to a very, very special episode of Revenge of the 90s today. We are obviously marching through our Halloween spooktacular, and today we are getting, you're getting a real treat. You're getting one of our golden movies. This is one of our, you know, I would say top tier films that we would like to talk about on this podcast. This is, you know, one of those ones that holds a real special place in our hearts, and especially not just in the horror genre, but just in general. I love the shit out of this franchise, and it's special for us because we started this entire podcast with this franchise. So
yep.
If you don't already know, we are going to be talking about 1997's Scream 2. I'm so pumped. I'm Steve. With me, as always, is Fabs. Buddy, let's do it.
Oh,
let's get nuts.
I'm so excited. I love this movie so much. This whole franchise. Oh, God.
We do not appreciate... I mean, okay, so the new Scream trailer came out.
Jesus Christ, yes.
I would argue that they made one mistake in not calling this movie Scream, but the 5 was the S. And so,
totally, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
Five right. Cream. I don't know why we didn't get that. I'm a little mad about that because, like, why would you? Now, it's kind of like Halloween, where you're just like, oh, we're just going to like retitle it. And yeah, whatever. That's neither here nor there. because the actual content of the trailer, holy shit, I'm so ready. Like, I've never, you know, after seeing that trailer and being as like excited as I was for it, and then watching Scream 2 again, this is just such a like wonderful franchise because it so very clearly knows when to have fun, knows when to be scary, knows when to be gory, knows when to be like, you know, heartfelt. Like it's like the best mix of everything you always want in a horror movie. And it has never let us down over 4 movies. And I'm so excited for the 5th.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's crazy about it is the consistency going into the 5th movie, which it looks awesome. Like, I'm not worried about it at all. Like, I know it's going to be good. But yeah, I mean, I would say Scream 3 is probably like the weakest one, but it was still like pretty good in terms of horror movies. I don't know if there's a better, if you just grab the top 5 movies of any horror franchise, you know, Halloween has 12 of them. Friday the 13th has a ton. Nightmare on Elm Street has a ton. If you grab the top 5, like Scream is easily the best overall series, like in terms of the quality in the movies. Like they drop a little, I think, with Scream 3, but Scream 4 is really good. Like it's super underrated. And for some reason, I didn't remember Scream 2 being as good as it was. So for me, and I've talked about it in the past, the Scream series is like the pivotal series from my childhood, like in the horror genre, where I just remember so much about it. Like coming out, when Scream came out, all I heard, because when the first Scream came out, I was 9 years old. So I like obviously didn't see that movie when it first came out. But I remember just older kids in my school talking about it. They're like, this mm-hmm. movie is like the scariest movie ever made. And like you're going to get physically sick if you see it. And so I remember my parents renting it from Blockbuster and my sending my siblings up the stairs to tell me what was happening in the movie. And then eventually Scream 2 came out. And now I'm like turning 12. And my mom lets me see Scream 1. We rent it. Mm-hmm. I love it. She's super cool about horror movie stuff. So this movie, when it came, we didn't see it in theaters because like I couldn't go to a theater and see it. But when it came out to Blockbuster, I have a very vivid memory of my mom getting it like the day it came out and her and I watching this movie.
That's awesome.
It was so good. So like this series like defined the horror genre for me growing up. So like that's why I like have such an affinity for it. And Scream 2 is like, it's super dope still.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I know some critics have said like, it's even better than the first one, which is like certainly debatable, but it really is like, and again, it's, you know, the fact that it's Scream, it's going to be meta and it's going to be self-referential and it's going to talk about the horror genre and, you know, try to break it down. And in the sequel, you've got Randy until he meets his demise being that mouthpiece for that to say, you know, sequels always suck. And here's what you got to go bigger and better. You got to have more gore. You got to like have more twists. And like Scream does all of that, but it never comes off as like shoehorned in or hokey or like getting like too much beyond itself. Like it's just as fun a ride as the first movie. And it like, really is. And like that last 10 minutes of Scream 2, when all the cards are on the table and you know everybody and who's involved. I mean, it's fantastic. And it turns, there's a moment where Mickey says that Sydney has a Linda Hamilton thing going on because she starts to be like, she starts to kick some ass and like she beats up, you know, she beats up Mickey a bunch on the stage. And that is one of the cool things too about Scream 2 is that that's where you really see Neve Campbell like turn into a badass. Like throughout this whole series, she's like one of the strongest female leads in horror you'll ever see because she like embraces what's going on with her and understands like this is her life and is going to like not take it sitting down or being scared. And like in the Scream 5 trailer, when it like cuts in, it like zooms in on her when she's answering the phone and Dewey's like, do you have a gun? And she's like, I'm Sydney Prescott. Of course I have a gun. I'm like, fuck yeah, let's go.
Yes.
Like, I'm so ready.
Dude. So do we want to talk about the trailer real quick before we get too deep into Scream 2?
Yeah. Okay.
So like, what were your first like initial thoughts from the trailer?
So, because obviously I have to think about it in terms of like, how are they going to approach it from like the horror genre?
Right.
And what are they going to do to like, break it down and try to like be like a mirror to the genre? The way that I see it, because this is obviously the first one without Wes Craven. And let me just check. So obviously this is going to be the first one not written by, I believe, Kevin Williamson as well. I don't know if he wrote Scream 3. Did he write 4? So he didn't write 3, and I don't know if he wrote 4. Let me just check. He did write 4. So 3 being the weakest might be due in part to that. So
probably
Wes Craven directed all of them up through 4, and now you've got an entirely new team and vision behind Scream 5. So my thinking is that this movie will be sort of a look at like, it'll be like a more brutal movie. I don't know if it'll be as fun. Like, and that's fine. And it may be, maybe I'm wrong, but I get the sense that it'll be like, it'll be, because like when you look at like Halloween, both the Rob Zombie and the David Gordon Green, you know, reboot-esque thing, there's a brutality there.
Yes.
That it's amped up. And yes. I wonder if this movie will be like, okay, by the fifth movie, or like when you do the quote-unquote reboot, you bring in the old guard, but then you have the new characters, and it's like, it's more brutal. In this day and age, people expect brutality in their horror. Right. So I wonder if that will be like the main thrust of it. Also, I absolutely fucking love the shot where Dewey is in the hospital dropping all the shells out of his revolver.
Oh my God. Yes.
Oh, doing like the most badass walk of all time. Like, oh my God.
Dude. Yes. It looks like he's like living in a trailer, like a character from Kill Bill, which I love.
Yep.
Like, I don't know what's his living situation.
Yeah.
But it's amazing. The scenes we see with Ghostface in this movie, like, I'm legit, like, scared. Like, I agree with your assessment. Like, I think it's going to be super brutal. You get the scene where, like, the dude's outside some brick building and the car pulls up and the lights turn on. He goes and he, like, Ghostface just appears behind him. And then you get the shadow of Ghostface against the building where he's doing, like, a Jesus, like, arms type thing. And I'm just like, oh, God. And then the line when Sydney's back in town and he's like, Sydney Prescott, it's an honor. Like, oh, my God. Just chills watching and hearing that. I speculate they're definitely going to kill one of the big three, if not two of the big three.
I hope not, though. I mean,
I hope not, I think they will.
It's tough, man, because now you got a whole different team behind it. So it's an interesting. I mean, I could see like Dewey being it, because like it would appear if he's living in a trailer, like he's not with Gale.
Right.
And I wonder, and like he's all bearded and everything. So I wonder if like his life has like spiraled out of control. And like,
yeah, I don't think he's sheriff anymore.
Yeah. I would venture to guess that like something happened where he's in like a dark place. Because
maybe
he became
like a QAnon and he lost the re-election because they're like more liberal.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That would be quite the twist and very disappointing for Dewey.
Or you just don't know, like he's in this trailer the entire movie and you're just like, he's like, Sydney, I'll be right there. I just got to make one stop. And you realize he's been parked outside the Capitol and it's like January 6th. And you're just like, no, Dewey.
No.
And he puts on the face paint and his like his horned helmet. And you're just like, oh my God, that was Dewey.
Dewey. And he gets arrested. Dude, the other thing is Dewey could be like one of those early deaths. Because like, remember in like 3, mm-hmm. doesn't Cotton get killed like in the first?
Cotton's okay.
The opener, right?
Because his girlfriend is killed. Yeah, he's the opener. Yeah, he's so, stuck in LA traffic and he gets called and yep.
Yeah, so I could see, like, weirdly enough, I know he confronts Ghostface, obviously, because it's in the trailer and like you would assume he would, but it would be interesting to me if like they were gonna kill somebody off, would it be like quick like that? Although no, because he shows up in some other scenes describing like the rules and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so,
and he talks about how there's been three kills so far. So like,
yeah,
I
that's
can
true,
see
that's
him
true.
Being like the Randy slot, like you get in Scream 2, where
oh
it's like
yeah,
you
right,
your opening 30 or 40 minutes out of the way, he sets himself some stuff up, gets Gale and Sydney up to speed of like what's going on in Woodsboro and who the teens impacted are, and then he goes to the hospital to investigate and gets killed because there is a quick shot of Gale running toward what looks like a police line screaming. So I would imagine that's either likely not Sydney, but more likely Dewey.
Yeah. I'll be super bummed if that's the case, but
yeah,
I'll accept it, you know?
Yeah.
Cause that's what Scream does. I mean, Scream, it's gotten to the point where there's your power trio, but Scream kills off like basically everybody.
It does. Yeah, there's not a lot of turnover from movie to movie. I was hoping for a Kirby reappearance because we don't technically see her die.
But that's true. I love Kirby. Well, Kirby could come back as the killer. Kirby's a great character. I love Kirby.
That would be so dope if Kirby came back as a killer. Oh yeah. My God. Yes.
Like she's been like biding her time this whole time. And like, I mean, well, okay. So you got to think of it this way. Is like, what's the connection to Sydney going to be? I mean,
Well, there might not be one. What if there isn't one? Because it looks like it's just somebody who's like trying to rehash. Maybe they weren't expecting Sydney to come back.
Yeah, that's true. It would be really interesting. Because then it's just like, well, like, what do I care about the twist then at that point? Like, do I care that's about true, the twist?
You kind of want it to be.
Yeah, like, I'd have to assume there's some connection. But like, by this point, it's just like, you already did the family angle. You already did everything else in the first three movies. So Kirby would be a really interesting one. Somebody from like the previous movies that like survived that we didn't know about or like, I don't know, but it would be interesting. I don't know.
There was always the like, because Matthew Lillard has a brief cameo in this movie at the fraternity party that you get, like the early party scene. He like showed up on set and he's in a frame. Yeah. And so there's
that's
like
cool.
Always been the rumor that like Stu survived the first movie and like no one knew he survived. And he was at that party stalking Sydney and he's just buying his time, which I would, even if it like doesn't make a whole lot of sense, I would like freak out if Matthew Lillard came back as Stu in this movie.
Yeah.
And was a killer. I would just throw my wallet at the screen and be like, take it. Take whatever you want out of there. Like, I don't care. That's incredible. I don't give a shit. It makes zero sense.
Well, because for a movie like this, the theme would have to be like nostalgia. So nostalgia and horror, and like what would be more nostalgic for like the older audience than like bringing back one of the guys from the first movie, you know?
Yeah.
So that would be nuts. Like, what if it was like him and Kirby, like as like the two killers, and you're just like, what the fuck?
I would be coming all over the, like they would be like, sir, this isn't a porn theater. I'm like, I can't control it.
I'm sick.
But like, so like, I mean, what would be crazy? Like, I think that if you're going to do that, you're going to have to do a little bit of a retcon opening scene where like they're wheeling the bodies out and something happens the night of that first massacre with Stu's body. And like, he's not actually dead. And for some reason, no one like said anything, or Stu grabbed a body, like say he's alive. He grabbed a body before it was incinerated, threw it in. They're like, oh, that's got to be him. And he's just been living off the grid, waiting to kill Sydney. But I mean, I doubt that's like a 0.1% probability of that happening. But I would love that, because I agree. One of the coolest things about the Scream franchise, it's essentially like a Dateline episode on steroids about like a small town, like affair that turned deadly. But in this instance, it like resulted in a woman being murdered, someone being wrongfully accused, sentenced to death row. And then the person she had the affair with is the one, like her, that person's kid killed her and then would go to try to murder the daughter, which would then spring a bunch of copycats.
And, right.
Well, not even copycats, because then in the second one, it's Billy's mom. And then somebody who's like grooming to be a serial killer. And the third one, it's her unknown stepbrother. And in the fourth one, it's her cousin who doesn't like that Sydney has got, she wants to be famous. It's her turn to shine. So like, it's all, what's been cool about it is there's always been a connection to that original Maureen Prescott murder. And like, I do agree, you need to have something, even though Scream 4, it's like pretty loose. And I think Scream 3 was like even more egregious, though, where it's just like, oh, she had a kid. And like, I'm that kid.
Yeah.
And I want revenge. Yeah. And it's like, okay, right. I guess. Like,
for whatever. Some reason.
Yeah, whatever.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point, is that everything that actually gets like weirdly, not, I guess not lost, because like in the twist of every one of these movies, that's like all laid out there. But like, I don't know if anyone ever talks about in Scream, like that's the basis of this entire franchise, is like it all stems from that.
Because
you know?
Of how cool Ghostface is.
That's
and
true.
And the voice changer and the use of technology and how meta the movie is. Like those are all the sexy things that are like redefined horror for a while. But when you get down to the guts of it, it's like a pretty interesting like small town drama story.
Yeah, and everything stems from her mom banging Cotton Weary, right? Is that...
And Billy's dad.
And
Billy's... Billy's dad was the reason that Billy's mom left. And then Billy... I mean, Maureen was getting around. You know, she was...
Yes, she was.
Not super fateful, but but also I think she had trauma, which you find out in the third movie, because she was like horribly abused when she was trying to be an aspiring actress. So like there was definitely some of that that I think probably led to affairs and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was Cotton got blamed for it.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, gosh, I don't know who's left in terms of the family or the connections.
There's not a lot of people left. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
I mean, Billy's dad's around still.
I mean, one of those kids could be like a relative that they don't know about or something.
Well, and that's what you get in the trailer, Steve. The reason the people who are being killed are all relatives of the victims from the first movie, which is a really fun twist.
Do they say that in the trailer?
Yeah, yeah.
The
police station. They're talking. Yeah, one of the lines is like all of the victims, or like when Sydney, Gail, and Dewey are talking to like the new batch of kids, they're like, okay, what do the victims have in common? They're all related to victims from the first like Woodsboro massacre.
Oh, okay. I missed that. Oh my God. I love it.
Yeah, which is sweet. Like also if you're related, just like drive, get the fuck out of town. I'd be like,
yeah.
After the second person, I'd be like, oh, I'm leaving. Like I'm second cousins with...
Yeah, the minute that they start to piece that together, okay, bye. Yeah, it's not supernatural. Like, if I just go, like, across the country, like, I'm fine. No one's going to come kill me.
Right. Yeah, that's a big, like, detour for Ghostface.
Yeah, I've always thought that, like, Ghostface, you know, he's not like a Michael Myers or Jason. It's just, like, a person. So...
Right.
You're probably fine if you were to just, like, get the hell out of town.
Absolutely.
All right. God. Oh, I can't wait. In the meantime, let's talk about Scream 2. So
perfect.
It rules. It opens on one of my favorite openers ever.
So good.
Where Jada Pinkett Smith and Omar Epps, they are college students going to see the movie premiere of Stab. So the story of the Woodsboro Massacre. And it's so utterly 90s because like just like everything about it just has like a very 90s flair. And like one of the things that's just like wild to me that would really like absolutely piss me off is like it's like just like an opening night for a movie and like everyone in the crowd is like going fucking ape shit in like the aisles and stuff, like throwing shit and like screaming during the movie and everything. It's like that's all well and good when it's like a Rocky Horror, but like I actually want to watch. Can I please see this movie first before I go insane?
Also, like, so I sound like a psychopath because like I'm telling you like about Woodsboro as if like this was a historic event, and like I'm giving you this like town I'm from's backstory. So Woodsboro takes place in like California. It's like Northern California. Specifically in Northern California town. The college in this movie takes place in Ohio.
Really?
Yes. It takes place in Ohio. They filmed it in Georgia to like mock trees in Ohio instead of filming in Ohio for some reason. If this movie would have been shot
in
Athens, Ohio, I'd have Scream tattoos all over my body.
Yeah, I'd get a ghost face tattoo.
Yeah, just like, on my face at all times.
Right.
but I bring that up because to Steve's point, I could see opening night in Woodsboro being off the chain, even though like yeah. you're only a couple years removed from a bunch of your townsfolk being butchered. Yeah. I could still see like stupid teenagers like losing their shit and like, but this is across the country. And like,
yeah,
they're losing their shit in this like Ohio town for some reason over the opening night of this horror movie. And I don't understand it.
Which like most people wouldn't have any clue really no. about like what happened. And they'd be like, oh, a horror movie about this thing. Like, oh, okay. The thought that I had in this viewing that I've never had before is I actually, so everybody in this opening theater scene is wearing like a ghost face mask, which comes back to hurt Jada Pinkett Smith because when Ghostface murders Omar Epps, they wear the mask and then stab her to death in the crowded theater, which is like one of the more egregious deaths of this entire franchise.
It's intense. Yeah.
It's intense, but it's also like one of those ones where it's like Ghostface sometimes gets away with like some pretty wild stuff. And it's like, I don't know if it's yeah. I don't know if anybody would have not noticed. Somebody would have seen somebody getting stabbed in the chest, but I digress.
I agree.
The one thing that I found interesting was, okay, so this was a real series of murders that happened in this world. And the killer wore this like white mask. I find it like, it would be like reprehensible if they like sold those masks and like allowed people to like buy them. So,
right.
And like
it's a world
celebrating it.
Where Michael Myers exists and they sell Michael Myers masks at Halloween stores.
Exactly.
And he like, hasn't been captured. Like that, I'm not saying like you couldn't get them on Amazon possibly or Etsy or something like that. I'm just saying like Spirit Halloween probably is just going to like avoid that controversy and not sell, you know, the ghost face mask.
The mask of an actual killer.
Right.
You know, if we were all able to go to Spirit Halloween and buy like a Ted Bundy mask and just be like, I'm correct. Ted Bundy for Halloween.
And you know, like the Mickey's motive is going to be he wants to have a big trial and he's going to say like the movies made him do it to prove that like we talked about this on previous episodes about how scary movies, violent movies, violent video games, that was always like the boogeyman in the 90s for mm-hmm. like not wanting to actually do any like legislation on gun control or anything like that. But to further prove that, I feel like by now, 26 years in, like it's pretty surprising there hasn't been somebody who has like done a string of murders copying Ghostface from Scream. Like that's honestly stunning to me that that's not happened.
I mean, that would just go to prove that movies and media don't have that influence.
Correct. Yes.
You know, exactly right. Like that would be the case if people were like that influenced by, you know, film and video games and all that stuff that were like, oh, I can't believe I saw it on screen. So I just went ahead and did it. Like there were,
yeah, exactly.
There have been like people who have said, like cited some things as references. I want to say like, oh man, like maybe I'm one of the many mass shooters we've had. But there have been like, I feel like there have been random people in like manifestos who have been like, you know, like, oh, it was this thing I was influenced by, but maybe not. So, you know, sometimes like it's always just like A Clockwork Orange or something like that, but nothing like in this context that we're talking about right. where it's like, yeah, like, you know, now, okay. Now Linton, a guest of ours many times over who will be on another episode soon. He was saying that it would be interesting if it went like a new Nightmare route and you had that exact story in Scream 5 where these are, it's actually like, unfortunately they say Sydney. So it's like clear that it's not Neve Campbell, but if
you
like,
and I were talking about this in our New Nightmare episode.
Oh, were we about that doing like a new pitch. Nightmare Scream?
Yeah. That was our pitch where it's actually Neve Campbell, David yes. Arquette. Like, yeah, that was our, that we wanted to do that also.
I forgot about that. Yeah. I forgot about that. Cause yeah. he was talking about that as well. And I was like, oh, that does sound like a good idea. Completely forgetting that I had talked about it a year ago. But yeah, that would be cool. That would be a way to address what you're saying. But yeah, so anyway, so Scream 2 opens with that just absolutely wild scene with Omar Epps and Jada Pinkett Smith. But it's really good because it really draws out, it's like a 15, almost like a 15 minute
sequence. Yeah, it's a big opener.
It's a big opener to the point where Jada Pinkett Smith gets on the goddamn poster. Like, she is on the poster and she's gone and she has no connection to anybody in the movie. Nope. She's just killed. But it's really well done because of that. And Robert Rodriguez directed the stab scenes, by the way.
Oh, that's incredible.
And which is fun.
I love that. That's the beginning of... So, like, going forward, you were now in a world where stab movie exists based off the Woodsboro murders. And so Heather Graham plays Drew Barrymore's character in Stab.
Yep.
You get Tori Spelling playing Sidney Prescott. You get Luke Wilson playing Billy, which is amazing.
Yes. Did you find it interesting when they did that scene in the school hallway with Tori Spelling and Luke Wilson? Like, how would they have gotten... Who would have told them the conversation between Nev Campbell and Billy?
Yeah, the conversation... Yes, it's amazing. Yeah, it's like an identical conversation. Yeah.
Who saw that and was like, I got to tell this writer.
I got to tell the writer this. And then in Scream 3, Stab 3 is being made. And then in Scream 4, there's like 7 Stab movies by that point. And so the first two killing sequences you see are movies within movies that... Yep. And it's somebody watching like Stab 5 or Stab 6.
Oh, so yeah. Scream 4. It's like,
You have this whole other like meta world going on where they're getting like celebrities to play characters in the Stab movies to get these fun little cameos as a nod to like the famous Drew Barrymore opening death scene where everyone thought she was going to be one of the leads of the movie because she was the biggest star attached. And then that obviously didn't happen.
I hope they do that again for...
Me too.
Scream. I mean, they have to maintain like, you know, some of the things that make Scream Scream, you know. But anyway, so Sidney Prescott is in college now. She's got a boyfriend, Jerry O'Connell.
Yeah.
Derek. And she's got a group of friends. So Randy's also going to school there. And she learns of the murders and because they happen like, you know, in town and everyone's starting to wonder if it's like, you know, a copycat killer. And so she's, you know, justifiably on edge and that's where everything gets rolling. And pretty immediately Dewey shows up, which I find hilarious that it's like actually handled pretty well where Dewey's like, oh, I heard about the killers or the killing. So I just got on the first flight. You know, I would assume he's still recovering from his injuries from the first movie. So it's like, all right, I buy that he just shows up. I get that.
Yeah, I think this is less than like 2 years removed from the events of the first movie. I want to say junior. Yeah. Sidney's probably a sophomore would be my guess. So probably we'll say 2.5 years.
She's a theater major. The limp.
That like disappears throughout the series. He had like nerve damage. Then he gets stabbed a shitload of times. I take it as at the end of this movie, he gets stabbed a bunch of times. I look at it as like a rookie of the year situation where he got stabbed, got the limp, but then he got stabbed and his nerves went back to alignment and then his limp went away for future movies.
That's absolutely the case.
In Scream 3 and Scream 4, by Scream 4, he's like a fully functioning like sheriff again. And he doesn't really have a limp at all.
No. It seems like in the fifth one, they may have given him something. It looks like he has a limp in some of the scenes where he's walking. So I wonder if his powers subsided or something, or the scar tissue did something. I don't know. But I wonder if it was just David Arquette being like, dude, I'm not doing that limp again. I won't be doing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You want me to keep coming back? I won't do the limp.
All over the campus. And he has to cover a lot of terrain in some scenes where he's on the quad with his limp. And he's like, this is really, this is a pain in the ass. I don't want to do this limp at all.
the limp, and he has to keep his arm like
Scream 3
stationary.
Yeah,
you know?
Like this. Yeah. Yep.
So you could be right about
Randy.
That.
Randy's in the worst film class I've ever seen.
Oh God. Yeah. That, well, you were in film classes. So is that what it's like?
Yes. It's like super free form in this film class where it's like the teacher doesn't really exist. They're just all talking about sequels. They like Randy is like essentially the professor in this class. Timothy Oliphant, who plays Mickey our killer, is in it. They're talking about sequels. They're talking about how the events of this movie are going to like mirror a sequel. So like which sequel is better than the original? And they're going through them. And then what's funny is like they're eliminating sequels that are part of a trilogy. Sarah Michelle Gellar's in it. You get a little Joshua Jackson action, which is awesome. But then what's great is they're like T2, they like argue about. They throw out a couple others, like, no, that's part of a trilogy. But then they end it with like Godfather 2, which everyone is like, that's the ultimate sequel that's better than the original. And I think so too. But it's also part of a trilogy. So like their whole argument they're having, this like goofy, it's just like total film school arguments you have.
Snobbery.
At parties. Yeah. They're arguments you have at parties with girls you think are vibing on that, but really probably just rolling their eyes. Like, why do I hang out with this like band of fucking losers?
I don't want to hear anything else about aliens tonight. No, thanks.
Yeah. You don't want me to quote Hyman Roth in Godfather Part 2? Are you sure? I can. I'm really drunk. I can do it.
Oh, I know.
There was a man. We ran molasses. Shut the fuck up. Shut up. I'm over it.
We're going to go to the bars now. But yeah, it's there's the definite, you know, I do appreciate it though, because I just absolutely eat up any like 90s college. See, I think we talked about this when we did.
Yes. Yeah.
I can't remember what recently. I might have been. I Know What You Did Last Summer.
I Know What You Did Last Summer. Yeah.
Yeah. It was that because I got a taste of some college scenes in that. I eat up anything that has to do with college and 90s movies. The fact that I got a film class discussion, I was all about. you get a cafeteria scene in a bizarre ass.
Buffy with Dawson's Creek in it.
Oh, like, my God.
Give me it all. I
do wonder, was she, I did see a story about Sarah Michelle Gellar in this movie and I can't remember like why. So like, okay, wait. Yeah. Gellar was in between filming of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and had only recently finished work on I Know What You Did Last Summer. So she just agreed to be in the script because she agreed to be in the movie because she, and hadn't read the script just because of the success of Scream. So she had just done I Know What You Did Last Summer, and I don't think she knew like what that movie would become. So like in the same year, she's in both these movies, which is like super interesting.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Also, dude, it's like so crazy to think like Neve Campbell shot Mondays and Tuesdays. She did Party of Five during the day. And then on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, she would do Scream 2. So on Sundays, she would work all night until 6 a.m., go home for 15 minutes, and then go to the Party of Five set. Like, it's pretty fucked up. Like, that's just so wild to me.
That's,
you know,
crazy.
Some of the,
these
like people who would do like a TV show and then a movie at the same time. Which
that's,
I guess Courtney Cox
would
have done Friends.
Yeah, Courtney Cox is probably doing Friends as well. Because, by 97, Friends was like a phenomenon. Courtney Cox was like taking off to like outer space, like going into this movie.
Yeah. And that's why you get David Schwimmer and Jennifer Aniston jokes, because they make that one line about her nude photo of her, but it's on Jennifer Aniston's body. So,
yes,
you know, that's fun. But yeah, so you get the film class scene, you get the like ridiculous college cafeteria, you get a ridiculous college library. Like, I'm all for it. Give me all of that. You get like a ton of like Greek life stuff, which like, oh, I'm so into, including Portia de Rossi running around as a sorority girl.
Rebecca Gayheart too.
She was in Urban Legend, right?
Yes, she was the killer in Urban Legend. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fun. So much fun. And so, you know, you just got all this like fun college stuff, which I enjoy. You got Jerry O'Connell as Derek, who's like very clearly the guy 35. You're supposed to believe.
Oh,
what were you saying?
I say he's clearly like 35. Like,
yeah. And a very, very much an adult man. Yes.
Yes. Right. But yeah, you're right. He was totally like, oh, he's probably the killer, right? Like, we should think he's the killer, right?
Rehash. Yeah. Cause like they always, you know, constantly bringing up the rehashing of the original because he's the boyfriend. I will say that they do a very good job giving you just enough doubt to think maybe he could be it. Like, you're like, no, it's too obvious. But then there are things that happen where you're like, maybe, like, I could see it, you know? Yeah.
They play it really smart because you get so distracted by, like, going back and forth on him. You largely, like, put Mickey away.
You forget he's not like, in the movie for, like, 35 minutes.
Right. And then you're just like... And then you're just wondering, you know, what Laurie Metcalf's doing. She's doing awesome stuff. But, like, you don't really think, like, okay, what can I, like, why would she be part of this? And they do it really well, and the twist is really great on that. But yeah, you spend so much time worrying about, you know, whether or not it's her boyfriend again, and then you kind of get tricked into forgetting about some of the other characters.
Well, let me ask you this, because I was thinking about this as I was watching it, you know, for like the 200th time or whatever. When do you start to know, do you think? Like, when are you starting to put the pieces together of who it could be? Or at least some
so
of it.
I don't... Okay, so like, there's a great line by Laurie Metcalf's that's kind of... Because she's always just like lurking in the background. So you're just kind of like, what's this character about? But I don't think there's like a whole lot of like hard evidence to really put anything there. But she does have one good line during a press conference. And one of the characters storms off. I think it's Gail storms off.
Mm-hmm.
And she's talking to the other reporters. And she's like, what? Like, I just thought if, you know, the murders are like... reminiscent of Woodsboro, maybe the killer is from Woodsboro. Mm-hmm. And so like, she's obviously from Woodsboro. She's Billy's mom. But with her, I was trying to look for clues this time. Like I hadn't really looked at it from like that lens. Mickey, I think is like he's kind of a little crazy. You know how crazy he is, but like, you're just kind of like, okay, like there, I'm not going to eliminate him. But they do a good job of like weaving him in and out because having the two killers is always tricky. And that's what Scream 3 did really well because you just assume it's two killers again. Because like Mickey's at the frat party right while Cece is simultaneously being murdered. But then you see Laurie Metcalf when the press shows up, but she's like, she shows up because she was like already on the scene. So you're like, oh, well, she couldn't have done it. So like, they're visually eliminating characters, but like they're not actually eliminating anybody. And so that was like really smart of them. So Mickey was one, like I actually, when I originally watched this, I thought he could be one of the killers. Like I was like pretty certain he was involved in some capacity. I had doubts about the boyfriend, but like I didn't really fully buy in the first time I watched it being the boyfriend. But Laurie Metcalf, I was just like, oh, damn. Oh, I couldn't have seen this coming.
Yeah. So the two things that I thought in this viewing where I was like, okay, I think by this point I would be able to say something's up here. One is when Gail and Dewey are watching the video footage in the classroom on the VCR. And then like the other TV comes on and Ghostface is filming them from the camera up above.
Oh, in the projector room. Yeah.
Yeah, in the projector room. But like he had cameras on everybody like throughout the day or whatever from like a hiding spot.
Right.
There is a scene earlier in the movie where Mickey is running around with a camcorder at like a party. And
oh,
so there's a real quick shot. There's a real quick shot where he's filming somebody with the camcorder. And at that point, I was like, okay, there's the connection, because like he has the camcorder. Great. So that would have been on my 200th viewing it took. But if you're looking for that like initial clue, I feel like that's one for him. And then the thing about Laurie Metcalf that this is actually, I think the last time you see her before the end, she, when Gale runs out of the building after thinking that Dewey's dead and thinking Cotton is the killer, she runs to a payphone.
He shows up with blood all over him.
Cotton shows up with all the blood all over him, and he just says that he was trying to help Dewey, which is suspicious. But when she runs to the payphone at like friggin' 10 o'clock at night, Laurie Metcalf is just standing there and like filing a story.
Yes.
And you're like, that's odd. Like, that's very strange.
Right outside.
Exactly. Yes. Right. So that would be the one where I'd be like, okay, something is very clearly up here with this character, because what is going on? So those would be my two indicators.
Yeah, because she's
be like,
always there. She's always on scene.
Yeah.
Always on the scene. And you're like, you know, you're kind of tricked, because also she doesn't have a camera person. She's like a news reporter, but she doesn't have a camera. She just has her like notebook every time they're like, she doesn't have like, Gale has a camera person with her. Some of the other press people have camera people with them. So yeah, that might be another hint, but yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. You're totally right. It's just like, you're filing a story like from a payphone. Like, what are you talking about?
At like 10 o'clock at night, right outside the building where like people were just like screaming. So
yeah,
that's where, but again, that's like, I never caught that really up until this viewing. And, you know, so obviously it works. That's one thing about Scream is like, I think it's very difficult. I think anybody who says that they know like who the killers are, you know, ahead of time are usually like lying, because it really is like very difficult to predict these kind of things. Scream 3,
Roman is like, I've never gotten it right. Like Roman's murdered in Scream 3, like his body's found, and it's just, he just put like fake blood on him. So like, why would you think he was still alive?
Right. Exactly. Right. And then in the fourth one, you think that like basically they turn the Randy character into one of the killers.
Right, right. Yes,
the Culkin.
Rory Culkin.
They essentially make Randy, like, what if Randy was the killer then? In addition to the Sydney connection. So that was interesting. But you don't necessarily buy, like, you might think, well, no, I never would have suspected Kirby in the fourth one.
Yeah, I wouldn't have either. But when you rewatch it, Emma Roberts is like super suspicious throughout it. But they do a good job, because it's like, why would she be involved? Like, she's Sydney's relative. So it's like, you kind of put it, again, you put it away in your mind, because there's a lot of like, she's always just like disappearing. Like, oh, like, where's my phone? Like, I didn't text him. Like, what are you talking about? And just like leaving. And then all of a sudden Ghostface like appears a few minutes later. And you're like, oh, okay, that's weird. But she's the lead, or she's the second protagonist.
Yeah, and like Emma Roberts doesn't play like she's not like a Neve Campbell type female lead. Like, Emma Roberts has a very like intense streak about her. So she very clear, like she comes off as a killer very easily. So
yes.
That's you know, like it, I buy it for sure with her. But yeah, so, and also like, dude, Laurie Metcalf is so goddamn good in this movie. I love, like, it's the role of a lifetime for her. Like, I know obviously like Lady Bird was probably going to be like the role of a lifetime for her. And like, everybody knows her from Roseanne, but like, she probably had to jump at the chance to do this movie, because she just like goes nuts for it. Like, when she starts doing like the, like, whole body convulsions when she's shooting the gun.
He was a good boy. And when Randy started speaking badly, I got a little stab happy. And you're like, oh shit. Like, calm down,
and her eyes, man, like the crazy eyes are just working.
Yes.
I love her in this. And then like when she's like jumping around on stage, like diving and ducking stuff in like a pantsuit, it was like, this is great. I love it. but yeah, so I want to see what your what's your take on Sydney being a theater major? I want to hear your.
Okay, so like I found that super interesting. I never really thought about it. That it's like pretty hilarious that Sydney's a theater major, but she also is like semi-famous, so like she doesn't really need to go to theater school to like have a career in acting. She could probably just like get an agent like pretty easily. But I do think it's interesting because it kind of sets up. Because she doesn't know her mom. She doesn't know her mom's backstory of like being this struggling starlet in Hollywood. And so I think it's interesting. They kind of bring that all together in Scream 3. I'm assuming they didn't know what they were going to do in Scream 3. And they use that as like, oh, that's a fun thing. Because her being an actress sets up a whole like great set piece where there's this like Greek play. And that's where like the final showdown takes place. And it's like really fun. But yeah, I just found it very interesting that like that would be her major after she's like a very, seems like a pretty private person who like doesn't want people looking at her. Especially since like all the murders happened in Scream 1. Like she doesn't like being associated with that. So it's interesting that she is then going to be on stage as like the lead and stuff. When people are like, oh, that's the Woodsboro girl, right? Like, because there's a Stab franchise that's now started based off her. So,
right.
I just found it very interesting.
You think she's getting paid for the Stab movies?
I gotta think so.
Like, I don't know.
It will, I mean, if it's based off Gail's book and Gail used all the people's names. So, like, she would have had to, like, sign off.
It doesn't seem like anybody's all that happy. I mean, obviously nobody's happy with Gail in this movie because like Dewey hates her guts and everything. And so they're all reading it for like the first time.
Yeah. I mean, but they call her Sydney in the scene we see. And so like they would have had to like get the, they would probably would have had to like sign off, like get her to sign off on that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I got to think maybe that's how she paid for college.
Yeah, that's true. I buy her as a theater major just in the sense that like, you know, she like, is using her trauma to like express it through art form. That I get that.
Okay, that's fair.
I buy that.
Okay, I'm sold with that.
Yeah, and also I like her being the theater major.
To your earlier point, she's super strong.
Exactly. So like that's where I see that correlating pretty well. And like also it makes for a great climax, like to set it on the stage. You know, where the play is, where that you see it earlier. So it's not just like some random auditorium where you're like, why is she here? You know,
exactly.
Like, why'd she run into the auditorium? Speaking of the auditorium and the play and the stage, Derek, the boyfriend, the last time we see him before he's killed is, he gives his like Greek letters to Sydney during a very, very cringy, could you imagine that happening at like a dining hall in college?
I would be like laughing my ass off at that person.
Oh, people would have been like hissing at him and just like heckling him and throwing shit at him.
I think this is supposed to be like Miami University. Where like Greek life's super big.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Cause like Miami University it was like the basis for the show Greek, which I love. On ABC Family. Mm-hmm. And it's like a very well-known like Greek system school in Ohio. And this seems to be like Greek life is like very important at this school. And so like at Ohio University, not so much. So like they would have, you're right. They would have been hissing and throwing food at them.
Yeah, that's true. At OU, it plays a lot differently. At Miami, this probably happens like once a week. Where then everybody starts gossiping about how like fucking Derek gave his Greek letters to Sydney. So that becomes a hot topic on campus. But Derek does do it. And apparently you're not supposed to do that. And so the brothers, they kidnap him and they're, you know, they want to throw like a big party, you know, and heckle it or haze him. So interestingly enough, they don't go and throw this party at like the frat. They go to like the auditorium and the stage where this play is going to be in like 2 days. And they just fuck up the set. Like they tie Derek to like the sun and they just start like drinking a shit ton and like spraying like fake stuff, fake blood all over him and like just making a giant mess of the stage. And it's like mind blowing that they would choose that as the like location. They like literally tie him to this thing and then like raise him up into the ceiling and just like leave him there. Like it's insane. I don't know. I don't understand what they were doing.
Also, like, it's not that late. Like, when the final showdown happens, they've all left. Like, that
party lasted like 5 minutes.
Like,
yeah, it was like,
yeah, it was like, hey, we're gonna rage at the stage from 10 to 10:15, and then we're gonna go to the bars.
And we're gonna clean up.
Great plan.
We will be cleaning up, so that it looks like nobody was here.
The stage, we will clean
up, and then we're going to the bars. Yes,
yes.
We may have accidentally left Derek there. I will say too, I forgot about the moment in this when Mickey convinces Sydney that Derek is the killer too.
Yes.
When he thinks he's like the partner, I thought that was pretty effective. Then it's strange that Mickey just blows a hole like in him and kills him. But Mickey yes. is like fully unhinged at that point. So I guess I buy it.
I love Timothy Oliphant, dude. Man, I can't believe he's in a Scream movie.
I know. Timothy Oliphant's one of my
he's the most handsome
underrated.
Like I love him. I love him so much.
Dude, Santa Clarita Diet. Love it. I'm so yes. bummed that didn't get a yes. final season.
I know. I know. Also, Perfect Getaway. That movie's super dope.
Perfect Getaway? I don't think I've...
Yes. It's a... okay, it takes place in Hawaii. The two other leads. Mila Jovovich and Steve Zahn are the other two leads. Chris Hemsworth's in it briefly. And there's a like somebody's killing people on one of the islands, and Steve Zahn and Mila Jovovich, they're newlyweds, and they're going on a hike as part of like their honeymoon, and they run into some like Chris Hemsworth and some like Marley Shelton, who's in Scream 4 and in Scream 5. They're these like creepy, like super dangerous seeming hikers. They get arrested for the murders. And, but then there's like some fun twists and they go on a hike with Timothy Oliphant and his wife. So it's awesome.
Interesting.
It's like a great thriller.
This is what a strange movie that I've just never heard of. 2009.
Yeah.
What a black hole of
it.
A period. Interesting. That's that area. That's just like an era of the early 2000s of filmmaking where there's just like so much stuff that just, you're just kind of like, eh.
Yeah, you don't see it.
Well, that's interestingly enough, I mean, that's pre-streaming. So it's like nowadays a movie like that like shows up on Hulu out of nowhere or whatever, Netflix, and it becomes like, have you guys heard of this? And it was like a movie, it's a movie from 10 years ago, you know? Yeah, and it trends. So
right.
That is like one of the great things about streaming is that like, and this may be somewhere, but you know, it was harder to, that kind of stuff. If it like did, it made like that particular movie you're talking about made like 22 million at the box office. And it's like, that was it. And then it just disappeared into nothing. So, I'm interested.
So
yeah.
I'll
add it to the list.
So around this time I used to like write movies down that I wanted to see that I wasn't going to see in theaters. And then I would like have that list with me when I would go to like Hollywood Video or Blockbuster.
Oh yeah.
And then that's how I found like some of these weird movies. I saw Timothy Oliphant was in it. And I was excited about it and I like Steve Zahn. And so, yeah, I saw it like, I think like 2 years after it came out. I remember watching it with my dad and my brother and we were all like, oh, that was like surprisingly fun. Like,
right.
Nice.
Well, check it out. I'll add it to my Letterboxd list. So,
ooh, nice.
Yeah. I used to do that too. I used to write down movies on paper. Yeah.
Yeah. We get some really good death sequence. So you have that opening death sequence, which is like super fun and effective. The second death sequence is Cece, aka Sarah Michelle Gellar.
She
is the sober sister in her sorority. And what's cool is like you kind of talked about with the trailer, this movie does a good blend of like actual, like legit horror. And so there's some like really great jump scare sequences. There's the famous like, do you want to die tonight? Cece, she's alone in her sorority and Ghostface is there. Also, that should have been like another hint for us that it was somebody in that film class. because like, why would you show that? Why would they like go after Cece randomly if they had no connection to her?
Oh, that's a good point. That's a great point. Well, only because like, well, yeah, they would have to know Cece. Right, exactly. So because all the victims are named after the original victims.
Right.
But right. how would you know her name then?
A random, yeah, because Facebook didn't exist or anything like that.
That's a great point.
I just realized that as I was saying it, I was like, oh yeah, that's probably why they had to have that like film class scene. And you just, it does serve as more good Randy stuff, but also it sets up Sarah Michelle Gellar's character. And then Mickey would have been the one to then do that murder or at least like pick that person, knowing that like, hey, she's not at this party. Oh, she's the sober sister. Okay. So she's alone in the sorority house. So then Laurie Metcalf can then kill her.
And she gets up like a pretty brutal death.
She does. She gets thrown off the like fourth floor of a building.
Yeah. Like, and like the stabs of her are like not, they don't cut. That scene is like one, like she gets thrown through the window. Yes. And then like in one cut, you just see like Ghostface just like stabbing her in the back and then like picking her back up and just launching her off that fourth story. That's brutal. She's like one of the worst kills of all. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a pretty brutal death.
Randy's is the one where I feel like it's like the silliest in a way.
Yes.
I mean, like obviously
very
he had to go.
I feel like.
It is forgettable because like he has a great moment up to that point when he's on the phone with Ghostface and he does like that like, fuck you kind of like retort to him. And then he just gets like kind of like dragged into a van and then of course in broad daylight and killed. Which again, Ghostface getting away with like a very questionable murder there. But his death, yeah, it doesn't really serve like, for it being Randy, it doesn't really serve like a bigger purpose in the movie, I guess. So right. It is a little forgettable. It's not the best one.
Maybe like he was supposed to like have this great finale death, but he was just so unbearable on set. And they're like, fuck it, we're killing him off today. Like,
we're going to fucking kill Jamie.
I can't be around Jamie Kennedy anymore.
Well, I will say this. The one thing about Scream 2 that's interesting from a script perspective is that this is a movie early days of the internet where like the actual killers and the plot got leaked. So, like the original script and like who was supposed to be the killers, which I would love to know. I have to look that up. That got leaked on the internet. And so they were like constantly rewriting this movie to try and like throw people off. And I think like the last like 40 pages or something were like completely written like during the filming of the movie. And then nobody on set knew who the killers were going to be until they started shooting. So my thinking is that it's possible that Randy was around longer. And then like in whatever this final version ended up being, they were just like, well, fuck it. We're going to kill him here. Cause like we're rewriting X, Y, and Z. So,
yeah. And they kind of need to, because, Randy and Dewey kind of team up and you like they get the great scene where they see scenes for the new movie that we talked about earlier. They talk about the rules of a sequel, but eventually you need Dewey to be with Gale. And if Randy exists, it's like really getting in the way of that. And
Dewey like absorbs the Randy knowledge.
It's great.
He becomes your conduit for like knowing that stuff. So it's like the minute he starts talking to Dewey, you're like, oh yeah, one of these guys is going to die. Like,
yeah,
there's no reason for two of them to exist.
Oh, here's a possible Scream 5 killer. Gale's cameraman who leaves in this movie.
Joel does come back.
Oh, at the very, very end, you're right.
Yeah.
But he survives and he's not in Scream 3. So he could.
That's true.
Come back in Scream 5.
And he's just like pissed because like he tries to give her big moment and she rebuffs him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That would be a weird one. That would be one where I'd be like, Okay.
You'd have to have like four minute flashback of like, wait, who are you?
He's like, it's me. Remember, and Sydney's like,
back at, when you were in college, Sydney, I was Gail's cameraman. And I left after Randy died in my van.
And she's like, well,
oh, okay.
I never really met you, so I guess I'll just take your word for it.
Yeah, I think you were standing next to Gail when like she approached me at one point. Yeah. it was right outside the quad.
Now you remember. It's like, yeah, sure.
Why are you doing this? She shorted my per diem. It was supposed to be $15 and she gave me $10.
It was off screen, but it happened. Yeah, I'm trying to think like just like some of the most like random ass like possible killers from people who are still left. And that would definitely be one of them. Marley Shelton could be.
Could be her. Could be somebody at that party in Scream 1. It was like, I was there that night. I left to see the dead principal. And you're like, oh.
It was fucked up.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just like somebody who was on the couch that night or like somebody who was like, you know, taking a shit in the bathroom while like, and like hearing all this like banging around going outside in the hallway. And it's just like
the big final scene and they just didn't want to come out.
And they're just scared because pooping on the toilet. Yeah, that could be it. Also, you've got, so there's just so many characters in this. There's so many threads. Cotton Weary comes into this randomly. He's so strange. Like, what a weird character, because like he bum rushes Sydney on like the quad, thinking somehow it's an official interview with Gail, and like is like surprised when Sydney's like, what the fuck are you doing? And he's like genuinely taken aback. Then he goes into the library and like gets really aggressive with her on this Diane Sawyer interview. But what I find very funny is the two FBI agents who are assigned to Sydney, like to go investigate this message that she gets on her computer where it's like, you're going to die. They're like, here, wait here. And they like put her in the stairwell as if like, that's the safe place to go. And then they go off and investigate.
One of them could go and like merely look at computer screens. There's like 20 computers.
And just start asking people. And so of course Cotton like easily gets access to her and like they get in their argument and then he gets arrested. And so they're trying to set up like Cotton Weary as being like a potential suspect as well for like obvious reasons. But I love the turn that they take with him, that he just kind of becomes like a bumbling, like uber nice guy by the end of this movie. Like where he's not, like he's just like a good dude. I did like that by the end of this. I thought that was fun.
And then in the third one, he has his own talk show, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's a bummer that he gets killed.
Yeah, he's a celebrity. So like they needed to have it to be somebody meaningful that wasn't Dewey or Gail. So like it had to be Cotton to get like Sydney's attention. Because if there's just these like murders happening, like
she's not gonna
fuck this. Like I'm good.
I'm sorry.
I'm gonna stay here.
Well, thank you.
But Cotton, yeah, that's Cotton's true. Death has more gravitas for her. So
yeah. Yeah, I mean it is. I guess in the fifth one, it'll be interesting. I mean, I guess it's just enough for Dewey to be like, hey, it's happening again. And it's happening to like everybody who's related.
Right.
I guess that's enough for her to be like, here we go again, baby.
Well, now she's on like, you know, the new Halloween, like the Laurie Strode level of badass.
Yes.
Where she's just like, cool. Like, let me get my fucking handgun. Like, I'm ready to go.
I'll be there on the next plane.
I'll get Gail. And like we're gonna fuck this guy up, and you're just like, oh shit,
okay,
cool.
Like we're gonna take the fucking fight to him because like she lives in a completely different city at this point, and she has to be the one to go. She's going home with no actual connection yet. It would appear where she's just like I'm going to fuck him up.
you're right, because in the fourth one, she writes her book. So that's like what brings her back to Woodsboro. Like, she's not actively choosing to like get involved in any of these like killings. So yeah, this is cool. Like, I like that. I mean, she's one of the most badass female characters, I would say, in any genre, but especially in the horror genre. So like, I love once the final, like the quote unquote final girl, the main protagonist, when they like finally graduate to like, I can kill you. Like, I'm not scared of you. Like, you're not my boogeyman anymore. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going to get whatever weapons I need. And like, I'm going at you. I'm not going to just like wait for my phone to ring and be scared.
Yeah. And it looks like in the shots of the fifth movie in the trailer, it looks like they're going back to the original house.
Yeah.
Did you see that? It looked like the original party house.
Yeah, there's a contest. So that house is in Northern California.
It's an Airbnb.
There's a contest. It's an Airbnb. And they set up the Airbnb for the month of October to look like the final party.
Oh my God.
From Scream 1.
That's messed up. That's wild.
I entered it a bunch of times. I don't know if I'm going to win. I don't think I will. But
oh God, my kids would be
like,
so wait, cool.
Why is there like fake blood everywhere? Like, what is this, Dad? I'm like, don't worry about it. Like, I'm gonna lay where Randy laid. And it's like, what? Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Or like any other Airbnb, I'd be like, gotta drag my daughter's pack and play with me. And I gotta set up the pack and play in the middle of like a blood soaked room for her to go to sleep. Like, exactly. Don't worry.
Kids, you're gonna sleep in the garage where Tatum died and I got stuck in like the doggy door.
Yeah, right.
It's iconic. I don't care if it's 20 degrees out here.
You're sleeping here. God, I love it. That would be cool. If you get the Airbnb, ditch the family.
If I get it, I'll have you come out. Like, we'll get babysitters for the kids and we can do a couples weekend. A romantic couples weekend at the Scream House.
The Scream House. I definitely won't tell my wife until we get there so that there's no way she can back out.
Right.
Because I don't know if she'd do it. So.
Yep. Fair enough.
All right. So yeah, man. Scream 2. Give me any other sort of thoughts or observations, final, you know, shit.
I just think this movie... I mean, Scream was such a phenomenon. And so this movie is just still super impressive to me that it was able to take and build off Scream's success and make a really good sequel. Like, whether or not Scream 2 is better than Scream, I mean, I don't think it is. Just the originality of Scream alone. That's beside the point. Like, they elevate so much stuff. They do so many things right in this movie. They know what works. Like, they understand what fans like in this series really well. I mean, it's Wes Craven, so like, of course, he's the master. And yeah, this movie has, I will say, this movie has some more compelling set pieces in terms of like death set pieces than the first movie does. Because the first movie, if you go through them, there's obviously the famous opening scene and then the final party scene. But other than that, like, you have the principal being killed in the office and like, I don't even think there's another death. There's not a death until like the final. Yeah. There's not really a death till the final party scene. So yeah, this movie does a good job though of setting those up and having a higher body count than the first one, but not doing it in a way where you're just like, oh, they're just trying to be like outrageous to top the first movie. Right. Like, a lot of the deaths make sense in this movie. And I agree with your point. Had they killed Randy and Dewey, I don't know how I would have felt, because I was already really bummed about Randy dying, but Dewey, he's my favorite. So like, that would have just been too much for me.
And if he dies in the fifth one, I'm going to have to do a wellness check on you.
I might like legitimately cry at a Scream movie if like Randy dies, especially or Dewey dies. Especially if it's like a really...
heroic,
really sad manner.
Yeah.
Like, whew.
I know.
We'll have to see.
I know. And it almost feels like they'll have to do it because, like, yes, I will feel genuinely horrible. Like we said, Gale, I would be sad, but maybe not as much. But like Dewey, there's just something about that character that would, he's so genuine that it would be like, it would be tough to come back from if I had to see that happen on screen. Let's see here. One other just like weird note, really quick about Scream 2 is that, so Marco Beltrami did the score. He did like the, I will say also like one of the most underrated themes is like the Woodsboro sort of like theme that Beltrami did for like Scream. It's really, really good. And apparently like Danny Elfman and Hans Zimmer like did some other pieces for this movie. And then also,
that's crazy,
like, which is so strange. And then also like Hans Zimmer's score from the movie Broken Arrow was like used in this movie for some reason.
Oh, really?
So I had no idea there was this much drama behind the score of this movie. But if you're into that stuff,
that's crazy.
You have to dig in a little bit deeper. Box office wise, it's a little interesting too. The original Scream made $173 million and Scream 2 did $172.4 million. So it actually made just about the same amount of money as the original, which is pretty impressive that Scream 2 made that. And then Scream 3 made $161.8 million and then Scream 4 did $97.2 million. Okay. So it'll be interesting to see if, I don't know if Scream 5 will hit $100 million in total gross. I'm not confident.
I'm not sure if it will.
But
maybe if there's a lot of buzz, because it's going to come out Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. So it'll be a holiday weekend. So maybe that will help it. And well, if there's a lot of buzz and good, good reviews.
And horror always does well. I mean, we saw it with Halloween Kills, just like absolutely went insane at the box office in its first weekend and got like that $50 million. So the appetite's always there. And January is a pretty slow month for movies. So it'll be interesting. I don't know. I mean, I hope to God it does. It would be great if it does, but we'll see. My guess would be, all right, my guess would be that it makes like, like $85 million would be my guess.
Okay.
Like in the end of its run.
I would say, I think it can get up to 95. I just really think it's going to be how those early reviews are. Because if it comes out and it has like an 85 on Rotten Tomatoes, I think people will be like, oh shit. Like,
yeah.
I think people are just kind of like, is this going to be good? Is this going to be like the first two? Is this going to be really good? Even though Scream 4 was really good, I think it's going to be kind of a wait and see approach. But the buzz online with the trailer, people were freaking out about it. So I'm hoping it gets up there. But yeah, I think you're probably pretty close to right.
Yeah, just like diminishing returns, you know. It's just like by default. And then obviously still like pandemic audiences and stuff like that. I could see, I mean, I hope to God, I would love for it to hit over 100, but I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I think like you said, word of mouth and the reviews will be the biggest thing on this one.
Yeah.
To see if it can draw in like a generation of people who are like, oh yeah, shit. You're like, yeah, I like Scream. And then see the reviews for it and be like, okay, I'm not doing anything on this random January weekend. So
totally.
Hopefully that pans out for him. Okay. That wraps it up for Scream 2. God, I love this movie so much. I love this franchise. It's so wonderful. I don't know if I wanted to keep going after 5, obviously. I would venture to guess this will be the end. I hope, but I don't know. Never say never. So Scream 2 is available wherever you want to, you know, rent Amazon Video, you know, Amazon Prime. It's on there. I don't think it's on any other streaming platforms. So that's where you can find it. If you're looking to go through a Scream marathon before the 5th movie, I would highly recommend it. That's what I'm in the middle of doing right now. I haven't seen 3 in years. Like, I think I only saw 3 once. Okay. So I've seen like 1 and 4 a ton. And then 2, I've started to see more of. 3, I'm going to watch that one next just to, for the hell of it. But yeah. All right. So now you all know my movie plans. So that's what I'm going to do as I get off here. And while you, on the other end of this conversation, you, the audience, what you can do is follow us on social and most importantly, rate, review, subscribe to us. That goes a long way and we really appreciate it. All right. Until next time, we will see you guys later. I just want to help you forget.